Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Steve, who has agreed to be with us to talk about his experience of being a visiting monk during this past year and the impact that that's had on deepening his practice. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So you actually did a really extended stay at the monastery earlier this year.
I did, and originally I was going to sign up for a month, and then I thought about, well, maybe I'll go for 3 months, and 3 months didn't work out, so I took the middle way. And
yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, middle way with 2 months.
With 2 months, right, right.
Yeah.
And, wow, and for the year of deep being practice, what a way to start the year.
So it occurs to me, Steve, to start out by asking you what feels like inspired you to make the choice? You know, when you were looking at your year of deepening practice, what had you choose that as one of your options?
Was that for the time going or just going for the visit?
Yeah, for the, why did, you know, what made you kind of make that pretty big decision to come to the monastery for 2 months as part of your deepening practice plan?
Oh, yeah. Previously, I've done 2 month-longs prior to this one. And, and both have been very profound experiences, spending the month in the monastery.
Yeah.
It's just practice is right there in front of you every day. From the moment you wake up until you lay down in bed and close your eyes. It's just nonstop practice for that period.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you feel like the impact has been on your practice as you've after you spent those 2 months there?
Well, I was blessed to have been there for 2 months, and there was also 2 other retreats that were going on during that time I was there. One was the what you practice is what you have, and the other was there's nothing wrong if you retreat.
Mm.
And I made the assumption that I would be working in the kitchen and helping the other retreatants and working alongside the monks while the retreats were going on.
Uh-huh.
And I was gifted with 2 more retreats. Of the what you practice and there's nothing wrong.
And there's nothing wrong.
Right.
Which you had done previously, so you were a veteran of that retreat, and you got to do it again.
Oh, and I highly recommend a second time too, because you know, it's new every time. It's like, you know, each day is a new day.
Yeah.
It's almost a new moment. Same goes for the retreats. It's never been there. Done this, done that. That's not true.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, yeah, that it's like a brand new retreat, even though maybe you even know the exercises we're going to do. It doesn't matter. It's completely a new experience.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And so on the what you practice retreat, there was a period during that retreat that I got identified with Stevie B, and he always has a hard time going into the class. He feels like he doesn't do very good with homework and
uh-huh.
you know, the paperwork type stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it just clicked, that retreat, it just clicked for me that I really, really needed to be the strong centered adult, the mentor,
uh-huh.
to be there for Stevie B in those times.
Uh-huh.
It was almost like, you know, this enough is enough.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Too many beatings over and over and over, the same content.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and this elevated the awareness of the mentor with Stevie B, and it's almost like a natural progression now when that arises and Stevie B's feeling like he's under pressure. The mentor, it's almost like taking a breath. The mentor arises at that moment.
Uh-huh. You know, I really appreciate you pointing that out. And if I'm not mistaken, I remember you talking about when you had that awareness during the retreat of that really renewed commitment of this little guy needs mentoring, not sometimes, but all the time.
All the time.
And then the gift of having that awareness on retreat in the context of living, essentially, as a monk at the monastery. So at the end of the retreat, you didn't leave.
Right.
You stayed. You were at the monastery, and you had that, as you say, wake up in the morning and start practice, go all day, practice, practice, close your eyes at night, practice.
Oh,
to have that. That awareness to kind of integrate into your being.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a heart opening at the same time. and the softening, because it required me to be present and to access the mentor with Stevie B. And
mm-hmm.
recording and listening was a huge part of that while on retreat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first thing in the morning is get up and do reassurances with Stevie B. And just to start the day off before we even put a foot on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I love you, Stevie B. And,
mm-hmm.
and you're perfect just the way you are. Just like we do on There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, but only
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Reassuring
mm-hmm.
that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a full-time job, you know, accessing the mentor and being there for Stevie B. But it's worth it.
Yeah, oh, exactly. You know, it's worth it, and it's sort of, as we do it more and more, we realize it's actually where I want to live. It's the way I want to be all the time.
Right. That's where I want to live. And
yeah.
You know, like, it even showed up today. You know, it shows up, and the reaction is just to go directly to the mentor. I mean, there's a little bit of discomfort and then awe, and then
uh-huh.
the mentoring process starts. It's like it's not going to go away,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it will, but
mm-hmm.
The process has become almost second nature.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
well, that's
on a daily basis.
Exactly. That sort of answers my next question, which is, what's been your experience of the effect of that in your day-to-day life when you're not at the monastery? And it sounds like they're all things, you know, even before you came to the monastery, you've been practicing for quite some time now and had a very committed practice. So you know about CVB, you know about the mentor, you know about recording and listening, you know, you have a daily practice. And yet it sounds like there was something about being there for that period of time that really allowed it to, for you to really take it on in a committed kind of 24/7 sort of a way. And so now when things come up that are difficult, it sounds like the habit, if you will, the go-to place now is to the mentor, is to that place of wanting to be here in the present moment with you.
Right. And just having, doing little reminders, just to, because, you know, I've been mentoring with Stevie B for quite some time, but out
mm-hmm.
here, away from the monastery, sometimes, I guess you can call them slips. Huh? And I forget sometimes and fall
yeah.
back into it and leave Stevie B vulnerable rather than being the strong centered
yeah.
adult for him. And so,
yeah.
I don't know, it was just that moment, this last time with the Visiting Monks program, that it kind of like, it hit home. It kind of like, it went to a different level.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It's kind of like an aha moment, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. It's an aha moment. And what I just saw when you said that was, and then the chance to be in the monastic environment for an extended period of time is the chance to kind of integrate that aha moment and have it be part of what's always there with you and not an insight that then conditioning gets to completely cover over and leave behind.
And yeah, being at the monastery for an extended period of time is a really fantastic way to deepen practice, in the year of deepening practice. And
yeah.
one of the little things I have that I took home with me from the monastery is, you know, they have these little white rocks speckled on the ground, and I don't know where they come from. These are just like pieces of quartz.
Uh-huh.
So I picked up two pieces of it, and one represented Stevie B, and the other one represented the mentor.
Uh-huh.
And I keep those in my pocket wherever
uh-huh.
I go.
Wow.
They go with me everywhere. So
wow.
I'll stick my hand in my pocket, and oh, there's Stevie B, and there's the mentor. Just a reminder to always be there for him.
That's so great.
To no longer
yeah.
Abandon him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Enough.
Yeah. Wow, that's powerful. To always have a tangible something you can touch to remind you of that commitment that you have.
Yes. And
yeah,
just so fantastic. And there was something else I was going to say, but it's leaving me right this moment.
With gone by.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things I just wanted to underline as you were talking that I really appreciate about the Visiting Monk program is that when a visiting monk arrives, one of the things they're invited to do is to look and see for you in particular, for this individual, what for you would deepen your practice right now? What would you like to focus on? And then, so for example, I don't know if it was for you, but it may have been, you know, mentoring.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely, actually, it was just a general awareness being directing my attention back
uh-huh.
to the heart.
Uh-huh.
And I think besides mentoring, probably the biggest thing I took from the 2 months of the Visiting Monk program is there's nothing more important than dropping it and returning to the heart, coming back to the breath over and over and over again. That in itself is enough.
Oh, it's more than enough, isn't it? It's everything.
Yes, I mean, it's the simplicity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And conditioning wants to make it so complex and make it so hard. And, oh, but what about this and what about that? And to really see.
Get it right all the time. And it's just like, it's enough's enough, you know. It's never going to get it right. So.
Yeah, that's right. I'm never going to, quote, get it right. I'm never going to reach that standard that conditioning keeps pushing out there for me to supposedly reach, where then I'll be okay. Instead, I'm going to just practice being okay now.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the simplicity of practice.
Yeah. Say that again?
I embrace the simplicity of practice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I notice that when it's not simple, that I'm usually going into conditioned mind for reference.
Yeah, that's a really good check-in, and kind of a nice overarching thing for all of us in this year of deepening practice is to realize that it really is quite simple, and that deepening is just deepening our willingness to be here, to stay here, to focus the attention, to be where we want to be, to deepen the roots of that, which, you know, has the voices lose their power over pulling us away from that. So, Steve, we're just about out of time. Anything else you want to throw in before we end?
My deepest gratitude to Sherry, all the monks, and all of Sangha, everyone who's practicing together in Sangha.
Yeah.
It's truly a gift that somehow on my path I ended up here. And, and I kind of hold that gently and cradle it, because I could have been in a lot of places in my life, but...
So true.
That's truly a gift.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. Yep. Thank you so much, Steve, for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen.
Take good care.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon. Wasn't that inspiring?
That was inspiring. That was inspiring. Yes.
Lovely to hear.
Yes.
So, in fact, Michael, that's something that's on my mind, and it was actually quite a coincidence that Steve was the guest for Jen on This Good News, because today I was just kind of formulating a blog that I want to write, inviting people who are old-time practitioners, a la Steve, to consider coming to the monastery for some of the winter months. You know, usually I don't know if there's a usually with that program. I don't think it's old enough to have a usually, but, retreat season is April to November, and that's when the majority of people come there to be visiting monks, and except for the ungodly heat this year, it is a lovely time to be there, and we've kind of steered away from the winter because it can be cold, but the advantages of the winter are, it's kind of it's quieter, it's slower, there's more time to sit, and days are shorter, and it just has a different practice feel to it. So I want to write to people, and this is, the first foray into the invitation to let people know that it's possible to come there during the winter months and be a visiting monk as well. There's plenty of good stuff to do, and, as I say, it's a great quiet time to practice and be there. So if people want to do that, they can write the registration office, and it's not a bit too early to start making plans for the next season, April onward, if people are thinking about coming and being a visiting monk. You want to pick your month, because we can only have so many visiting monks for each one of the months, and as Steve is attesting, it's a phenomenal way to deepen practice. It is, it's truly life-changing.
Great. Great. That's
wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I was appreciating what Steve shared at the end about how we could have ended up in lots of different places, and here we are with this practice, and how fortunate I feel with that.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody, we just had the 25th anniversary of Precepts this last weekend, and which was an amazing event of all old-timers in practice, or, old-timers. And somebody came up to me and said that she'd had an awareness during the time that we were there together that, she said, of all the things in the world I could be doing, I'm doing this, and it's such a good thing. So that realization that we're fortunate, and to take advantage of that knowledge by putting our hearts and souls into what it is that's made such a difference for us in our lives. And, of course, as we know, those voices are going to kick up and scream that, you know, you can't, you don't want to, and it's too hard, and blah, 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 blah. And we just say, yeah, whatever, and go ahead and Steve was saying, make the choice for the heart.
Yes. Yes. Cool. And I have
so, do you have announcements for us? What in the world is going on?
Well, coming up.
Do we have anything we're still doing?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
What?
According to my list, we do here.
Oh, good. What are we doing?
Weekend of October 19th through 21st is a rest and be thankful weekend retreat at the monastery, an opportunity to allow silence to give rise to the ever-present gratitude of our lives.
Yes. Sounds right, doesn't it?
Yes. There's time for meditation, group discussion, a workshop, and rest. The schedule.
Yeah. And I think all of the activities are optional except the rest.
Great, great. Mm-hmm. And there are two at-home practice events coming up. There's an at-home retreat on October 27th. That's a day filled with practice featuring groups via conference call and focused exercises.
Mm.
A great way to experience practice and Sangha in your home environment.
Yeah. You're going to a workshop without having to leave the house.
Oh, great.
What an amazing thing.
Practice coming right into your home.
Yeah. We'll track you down wherever you are.
Yeah. Guidance Day for monthly donors is November 3rd. Look at anything about your practice one-on-one with an experienced practitioner via phone or Skype. And bring in the new year with Sangha at the annual New Year's retreat with you, Sherry. It includes meditation, group discussions, yoga, guidance with you, Sherry, delicious vegetarian food, and free time to spend in nature on the center's spacious grounds.
Yes.
That's December 27th through January 1st, and we're in a new location in Menlo Park. It has spacious wooded grounds and the famous private baths, which are attached to your private room. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read more or sign up for any of these events.
Very exciting.
Yes.
I'm thrilled about that center. I'm very eager. Of course, we love Santa Sabina. And goodness knows, as soon as they get their remodeling done, the odds are really good that we're going to be back there. But this is a beautiful location, and we might get outvoted, you know, with these private baths. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to take a little poll at the end and say, what do you think? So we'll see.
Great. Great. Dan, I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Michael and Sherry. It's Janice.
Oh, hello, Janice. How are you?
I'm very, very well. And
you too.
Well, I had explained that I had turned 60 at the end of April, and I had decided I was going to do a full year of going to retreats or accepting whatever came up. And I started off with a bang with the Visiting Monks program for all of April. So it was nice to hear it being spoken about. And I just want to reinforce how fabulous that was to look at things.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the extended period of time and the incredible support that was built into the whole program.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not like we bring people there and then kind of abandon themselves to their karmic conditioning. It's very structured with support, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and there were some things, especially what I would call like my little blind spots, and or some big ones that I
that we all have.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I honestly don't see how I would have seen some of the things, and one thing in particular, if I hadn't been on that retreat, because it was just. The way it was structured, it allowed it to come up in a safe way.
I just want to stop you right there because that's a really important point. When we're in our regular lives, we get to see certain things because we're essentially looking in the same mirror all the time, right? I mean, things can change with work or with relationship or their difficulties or there's money stuff or whatever, but it all happens within a very familiar context. And when we do something like go to the monastery, and I mean, yes, it's profound for people if they go for a week, but to go for a month and to be looking in such an unusual mirror for that length of time, day after day after day, we are just bound to see things that we would not have seen otherwise.
Yeah. I have to say that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's helpful.
It's so helpful, and it has so stuck with me because I actually had, maybe the equivalent of another 2+ months of various things when I added all up. And I could keep applying it while I was on other retreats and when I kept coming back home again. Just touching into that and seeing what I saw. I see it over and over. And practice is, I just love the way practice is so simple to just keep coming back to the breath and the awareness. And when something pops up, like, oh, God, that's just that habit again. There it is. And just switch on the light and go into the light room.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, is it? We don't have to go back to our childhood and figure out what mother and father did wrong or why what lifetime that must have come from or anything else. It's just okay. Turn on the light.
Yeah.
Let's get back here to the breath and this is the moment we're in and is there a problem? We'll actually know. So here we are.
And I know that when some of the things that come up that are just, oh, there it is again, and this ranting little voice in the background or accusing or judging or something. And, I am just so grateful for practice because then I say to myself, oh, you know, what I'm doing, and I'll use the words that your teacher had said, you know, I can be a social relief. By taking care of myself.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to recognize my own adequacy, that I am equal to all life experiences. In fact, I can take that extra step of being grateful for the experiences that I'm having because I know they're all for my benefit. If it's something I'm struggling with, there, that's karma I need to see through and let go. If it's something that I'm really happy about, there. Well, actually, we could say the same thing. There, that's karma. I need to see and let go. One I enjoy possibly less than the other, but it's all for my benefit. Yeah,
and that's so helpful because when, you know, I have, you know, these things that I am, you know, struggling sometimes. I'm, yeah, there it is. And then I realize I don't need to be caught in the story, like you say, about why it is or what I did wrong or something.
Yes.
I just come right back.
Yes, and then we're just left with, well, what are these sensations that are triggering this this reaction? What are these sensations in the body holding this story in place? Do I need to go with a story and make meaning out of all of this, or could I just be with the body and with the breath and with what's happening right now and not need to make anything of it? And if the answer is yes, that's what I choose to do, then all the problems dissolve.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They do. And and I can make right choices, like, because, for example, I was feeling, I wasn't quite, since I just got back from a silent retreat, I haven't quite caught up, I'm not getting enough done, da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, I thought...
Yeah, I am. Uh-oh. Janice?
I just got the "you are unmuted" message. This is a different caller.
Oh, here I'm back again. I got unmuted for some reason.
Oh, okay.
The button got pressed.
Michael?
Maybe my time's up.
No, I don't think we do that, Janice.
We're all good. We're all good.
We're all
now.
Good?
We're all good.
Janice is back. The other person's on hold.
Yep, we're all good.
Okay.
All right, well, we'll finish that thought anyway. So you're starting
to
hear
the voices.
So I
just ran out and I decided, like, I don't even have to get in that story. I'll just do something physical. And I just chopped back all my old finished blackberries that I've harvested. And I came back in and, I just felt good. I just remembered, I need to be physical. Sometimes I'm tired when I have a little story running or aversion.
Yes.
Just a body sensation. And I did something completely different, and I felt better.
Boy, that's a tip. So often when we're feeling tired, it's because karmic conditioning, self-hate, is sucking the life force out of us. We get up, we go outside, preferably, but not necessarily, and we do something that moves the energy, moves the body, moves the energy, and poof, we're in a different place. The sensations in the body have changed. And our attention is on something other than maintaining the story, and we're in a completely different place.
Right.
That's very helpful. Very, very helpful.
And I just wanted to say thank you. Like, I was away so much, I couldn't do reflective listening buddies, and I'm so excited it's going to happen and that we've got the, you know, things, we've got all sorts of things lined up. I did half the email class, and I'm going to be reading all the rest of the emails. And the way I feel supported with the monthly donor program guidance and things, I think that it was said earlier that we have enough, but, you know, definitely we also have more than enough, and I can't say that I have a better mantra than that. We have more than enough.
We have more than enough. Thank you. We have
Speak
more than
a show
enough.
For all of everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, Janice.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And she didn't even mention Zen Awareness Coaches, Sherry.
Zen Awareness Coaches, that's right.
We
have more than enough in our practice. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
I like that mantra. I have more than enough.
More than enough. That's great.
Yeah.
Sherry,
who was that mystery voice?
Well, I was going to bring the mystery voice in after an important message.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And I'll be
right
back.
Go ahead. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night. Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, it's Beth.
Hey, Beth.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm okay.
I'm okay. Okay, what's going on?
Well, in general, looking at various patterns of conditioning and patterns of suffering, and always something to look at. But I got my husband's feedback on what I asked him, what did he see as my biggest pattern of suffering? Because I was just really curious. I mean, because he is more, you know, just an objective person. And he thought that my biggest pattern of EKC was that I always think everything needs to be a struggle. And, you know, you have to work hard and get ahead. And I have a lot of judgments about people who don't work hard or make something of their life and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how did that strike you?
I know I have very strong conditioning about you need to struggle and suffer, and you're guilty if you don't struggle and suffer and work hard. I know I have.
And you're not, yeah, and you're not even an artist?
An artist?
Yeah, you know, the struggling artist, the myth of the struggling. You can't produce really great art unless you struggle, suffer, and are miserable.
No, because
that's not where you're going.
EKC struggle, because my family was Jewish, is more about, you know, we have to be better than and work harder and get ahead and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
With a lot of judgment about people who don't do
who
that.
Who don't.
Uh-huh. And suffering is revered.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but,
that's a rugged one, isn't it?
So lots of, but I mean, I'm aware of that pattern where everything has to be a struggle and everything has to be hard and lots of judgment for people who don't
and never
giving
and
myself
guilt, right?
And high level guilt.
Yeah, because that goes, that fits nicely.
Because it's like in EKC world and the world of I was raised in, if you're not suffering, you're guilty.
Exactly. In fact, when you step back from it, the only way not to feel guilty is to be suffering.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And all the,
isn't
so I
that
see,
a load of horse pucky?
Well, I see it is, but I also get confused because, like, the great people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa, I mean, it's like they struggled to achieve great things, and, you know, we're not supposed to be, you know.
Now, wait a minute. Whoop. You know that beliefs and assumption part of our practice? We could be sliding over into this, okay? So let me pose this for you. First of all, how do we know that they were struggling? Okay, so we actually don't know anybody's internal system, right? We know what they say, and then we project whatever meaning we make of that. But let me suggest this to you. Do you think, how much suffering do you project those people would have experienced if they had not been allowed to pursue what they were pursuing?
I have no idea.
Do you see what I'm saying, though?
I'm not sure.
Each one of them was pursuing passionately something that was so close to their heart that there was no difference between the two.
Okay.
So I became curious
at some point. When I began to suspect, so I love the saints, the Catholic saints, just love them, and was not raised in any religion. So when I discovered them, I just loved them, and loved to read about them and find out and try to figure out what they were thinking and feeling and da 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 da. And I began to catch on that all of what the rest of the world projected was suffering for them was actually their delight. That they were doing exactly what they wanted to do. And that the only way they would have suffered is if they had been unable to do what they love to do. So I'm going to project that Mother Teresa's greatest joy was picking those people up in the slums and taking them in and nursing them to health. Because she saw each one of them as Jesus. Okay? Martin Luther King had a passion to free a people, as did Gandhi. To be stopped from doing that would have been death. Can you get a feel for it?
Yeah.
So I would suggest that what each of those people struggled against, the struggles that they talk about, were struggles against ego.
Okay.
How's that seem?
I mean, it sounds
plausible.
What would you say to someone who was raised in a culture where suffering and struggle is revered, and the guilt if you don't suffer and struggle, you're like a lazy loser?
Well, of course, first of all, you know, I like to write those things off as the hogwash that they are. So, you know, that kind of belief really serves what we call egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And that's really all it serves. So I would say you can walk in the footsteps of your heroes by working hard to get rid of that belief. So you can, in the same way each of those three that you mentioned did, you can go up against the devils that attempt to keep a person trapped in an artificial reality that serves nothing but ego.
Right.
Can you get a feel for it? Yeah. So you would be, if you take this on, you'll be doing exactly what they did. Because you will have to go up against that if you are going to be what life has created you, if you will. Bad form, bad choice of words for people from a religious background. But life is expressing itself through you, right? And you are the unique creation, the one and only you that will ever exist. So you have the potential to fulfill something for life that only you can fulfill. And the only thing that will stop you from doing that is being in relationship with a belief system that is using lies to control you and keep you from being who you really are.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So if those voices had gotten hold of Mother Teresa, then she would have needed to be pursuing some sort of career, right, that would have brought her, well, she's a bad example, isn't she, because she kind of did rise to the top of her, well, they all did. And the way they all did was by letting go of all of the things that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate threw in front of them to try to stop them.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So okay. It sounds, you know, when we go back to those things that we were conditioned to as children, you know, because we've been conditioned to them since we were children,
they sound deeply right and believable.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're anything other than nonsense. It's just nonsense that we've been told over and over for a really long time. And, you know, I love history. I love history because what we can see when we look at history is all of the things that people believed, and then we can see what's happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. And so in that, we get a chance to see beliefs and assumptions for the nonsense that they are. We can see the disastrous results of people believing that nonsense. I mean, people kill large numbers of people on a regular basis for no other reason than they're believing some sort of nonsense that says they should do that.
Right.
Yeah. And so once we see that with other people, we can up our chances of applying it to ourselves.
Right. Well, thank you.
You are welcome. Now, are you going to call me back after you've looked at this a little and practice with it a bit and tell me what you see?
I would love to.
Good. Good. Because I'm really eager to find out how it goes.
Thank you very
much.
Because
I think once you get out from under that burden, there are probably incredible things ahead of you.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Yep.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Pasha. I'm not
hey,
sure.
Pasha.
Can you hear me? Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
How are you doing?
Well, I was doing great until a few hours ago. And then I was thrown into a black hole.
Uh-oh.
And, yeah, but nevertheless... I'm so grateful for the practice and tools and the sitting group I'm going to for already many years. It's helping me hugely.
Right.
And the voice I have of resistance for listening my recordings would tell me something like, well, what's the benefit of it right now, or you already heard it. It's nothing new. It's talking to somebody who believes in some kind of immediate benefit from listening to the recordings. And yesterday the reading for the group was about reassurances. And it was perfectly hitting the spot of my belief. The belief I hold somehow calculating the, you know, the benefits. Or should I go rest? Should I go walk outside? Should I sit down for meditation? Or should I listen for the reassurances? And now it's kind of easier to see how that I voice is not helping, actually. It's just sucking me into that conversation.
Yes.
Which
is keeping you, that conversation that is keeping you from doing anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's,
and,
it's not actually trying to figure out, let's see, should you benefit or listen to recordings or should you go for a walk or... No, it just got you in a conversation to keep you from doing anything.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the one amazing thing happened some time ago when I was listening to the reassurances, and by mistake I hit the you know, that repeat button, so it repeats the same thing again and again.
Uh-huh.
And I was on a bicycle listening, and I couldn't reach for my recorder to switch it. So yeah, so I was going and listening again and again, the same reassurance. And then something happened. I finally heard it, and my eyes were like full of tears. I finally heard that, and it felt like I found a friend, the dear friend who is not leaving me. You know, I felt like
uh-huh.
that recorder is the friend who is just not giving up on me.
Yes, who will tell you the same thing over and over and over until
yes.
you hear it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So that was, that was hugely, huge discovery and reassurances that it's not what I hear. It's kind of being in that space of with my friend and hearing, and it doesn't matter exactly what's the topic, what's in that reassurance, but just being in that space puts me there. That it feels like magic for someone
that's such a good point, Pasha. I just want to underline it. Because when people first start a recording and listening practice, they're consumed by, well, what should I record? What should I say? I mean, what you're saying is the key to the whole thing. You've got in that little machine a friend who is always there and willing to tell you everything you need to remember in order to get back to yourself and be all right. And it doesn't matter. If I'm with my best friend, I'm with my best friend. It's not that what we're talking about is going to make the difference. It's the love that's going to make the difference.
Yes.
Right? And that's what you're hearing in that, is that there's somebody who has been talking into that machine who loves you unconditionally and is always there for you. And when you listen, you hear that voice and that connection and that commitment, and it opens your heart and all is well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm just going to go back to my friend and hear some more.
Good.
Yes.
Good. And is this black hole something you're going to get out of, you're already on your way out? Was it a great black hole?
it's very helpful to see. I'm kind of facing my ego, and it seems so huge, and it's like up on my face.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, I'm cornered. Like I have nowhere to go. I'm just going to listen to my reassurances.
That's right. And you just wear it down. You just wear it out. Because here's another matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That recorder, as long as you give it battery life, will last forever. Right, those messages are always there. The voice in your head, we can eventually wear down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for all this.
Well, you are so
practice.
Welcome.
I'm such a huge benefactor of all that. I'm just overflowing with gratitude and appreciation for all that and the hard work that monks do. And the time I spend in monastery is just amazing.
Life changing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pasha. Thank you for
the
sincerity of your practice.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. You're listening to Open Air. Well, aren't we all benefactors, Sherry?
We are. All those, you know, again, with the, you know, the precepts retreat, and it just, for me,
I'm always so happy to be reminded that throughout the last several, many centuries, I don't know how we want to, 4,000 or 5,000 years, people have been practicing like this so that when we're ready, it's there waiting for us. And there are no words for it. And so, yes, we're all beneficiaries of this tremendous gift. And we have an extraordinary group of people carrying on, right, having received the baton and taking it forward, so that, again, when others out there are ready and they begin to look around, this practice is there and waiting for them. So, very, very good.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I know that inspires me to contribute to my local group and all the ways I contribute to practice to attempt to pay back,
exactly,
which is impossible, the huge gift.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have to do the best we can to do that. And knowing full well that we can't, right? We really can't. We can't. Because what is given each one of us is just far more than we can ever give. But that doesn't mean we don't do the very, very best that we can.
Yeah. Wonderful. We're going to hear from our sponsors now, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think open air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Chris in Seattle.
Hi.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
I'm okay. I was trying to juggle getting dinner ready and picking up one of the kids down the street and trying to figure out if I'm going to get on the call and when. And anyway, it's all working. So I was talking to my reflective listening partner last night and about things that I know would be good for me kind of thing, and then trying not to let conditioning my schedule out. And I think the two things I think would be most helpful for me. Well, see, I'm already in my head. I just went three things, so I'm going to scale it back to one. Right now, I think.
Let's start with one.
Yes. I want to start with two, and then I hear three. So let's go with one. Is getting my recording and listening back on track, because one thing I really noticed on the call and in life is that the part of me who wants to do practice isn't getting enough airtime. And it's,
yeah.
And so what occurred to me is, how come this still small voice has to be the mentor? Why can't it should be the other way around? See, conditioning should be the still small voice, and then the mentor would be the one who's like talking all the time. But
Boy, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? And you know, Chris, something that you just said, again, I have to underline these statements that can just pass through so quickly. Yep. The part of us who wants to practice doesn't get enough airtime.
Yes.
The way karmic conditioning, self-hate would frame that is, well, you know, you should practice. You really should do these things. You don't want to, but you should. If you were the right person, then that's what you would be doing. And that glosses over, keeps us from realizing that, no, there's a huge part of me. In fact, I would suggest the only real part of me that wants to practice.
Yes. And, yeah, something you just said reminded me, what I'm identified with somebody who doesn't want to do practice, and maybe that's true, but I think the most important thing is what I said first, it might be repeated, which is that person's just not giving me airtime, and they're not, because I can think back to when I was practicing, when I've been at the monastery, and all those times, you know, when that person was, you know, really there, and that's what that's like. And yeah, and then that person just isn't around, or they're there, but recording and listening, when I've done in the past, is it's been such a fantastic vehicle for giving voice to those parts of me. Not even the part that wants to do practice, parts of me who want to do other things, and giving them their shot.
Yes. Yeah, and I love what you said. It really should be the other way around. The karmic conditioning should be a quiet little voice that, you know, you'd have to listen really hard to hear, and of course you wouldn't. And the voice of our heart, the mentor, should be just front and center and right there and talking with us and helping us out all the time. And that is kind of what happens when we really do our recording and listening practice. It does. Shift that around.
Yeah,
where the
it does.
Voice we hear most is the mentor.
I did a lot last year on retreat, and it was the most regular at that time. I did a lot of listening afterward and less recording. But when I was there, just the amount of recording I did, and because it was precepts, and I had so many different topics essentially to discuss with the mentor and everything. It was just it became. Because I was just because I was doing it so much, and that part of me was really, you know, getting hurt.
Yeah, and you know, I bet there's just very few people, certainly very few people we know who wouldn't say that what they really want in life is unconditional love, to be appreciated and seen and heard and cared for and supported, and it's what we want. It's what we try to give our children. It's what we try to give the people who are close to us, to take care of people and love people the way we want to be cared for and loved. And now we have an ability to have that all the time, because you can actually be in conversation with the authentic voice of your heart that does, in fact, provide unconditional love and acceptance for you. And still, even knowing that, we get talked out of it and get bamboozled into, you know, sliding off into relationship with those voices who don't even like us.
Right. And I think for me, one thing I was talking about last night too is, for me anyway, being able to talk about this stuff out loud is with you or my partner is really helpful. So, and it's sort of, I don't know, I've always found it helpful in the past to, you know, at least make some kind of public commitment. So I'll, I can commit tonight to, what's a reasonable goal? Recording and listening. Recording at least once a day and listening twice a day. Because
there,
I can,
there you go. Yeah, everybody's got some kind of a commute, right?
Yeah.
And so that's such a great time to listen and to
mm-hmm.
find that time to record when whatever it is, it just makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have enough things already on the recorder that I can listen to again. So
absolutely. I love that. If I have a long drive or a long wait or a long whatever, just to go back and just, you know, just start listening to some random time in the past to what was going on. And again, just that being in that relationship can bring me back to center and gratitude and joy and presence, even though, the conversation might be about something that happened 3 years ago.
Wow.
Doesn't matter. It's the relationship with center that makes all the difference.
Yes. So I will call back next week and report in on my first week of
very good
recording practice.
That's very good. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thank you for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air with Sharon Huber. It's so great. We get together at the same time every week, have these awesome conversations.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah. It's the best. It just keeps us on track.
Yes, it does.
You know, keeps us going down the right road.
Yes, yes. And we have another caller, Sherry. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next Oops. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Oh,
hello?
There.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi.
Here we are.
This is Andrea calling.
Hey, Andrea.
Hello.
What are you up to?
Well, it's been a while. I guess what I'm looking at is feeling kind of, I'm not sure how to say it, but just not knowing sure what to think. I've been dealing with my son and he's been diagnosed with ADHD by three people.
Of course. Every child in America is now diagnosed with that.
And so anyway, I'm just not really knowing where to go with all this, and it's feeling overwhelming and just feeling overwhelmed by all of this. So that's what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm. And what is overwhelming?
Well, I just feel like there's too much to deal with. Like it's too much to handle his issues as well as my work and all of that. It just feels overwhelming. And I guess I just felt really identified tonight. I didn't get a good result for my work that I wanted, and so I guess I just feel, it's just when things like that happen, it's just very hard for me to, I guess I just get really identified and feel really, I know, like I fall into this kind of state of depression, which I'm very familiar with.
And what is the alternative to that? Because, and the reason I ask that question is, there's always something, isn't there? I mean, for human beings, for conditioned human beings, there's always something. Right? The voices are always talking about something that's wrong, something that should be different, something urgent, something that's a problem, something to worry about, right?
Yeah. And
always.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the difference is that, you know, I've gotten to the point where I've been able to disidentify a lot from that, but I guess this is really hooking me.
Uh-huh. So then I would guess that the new content has kind of thrown you off of the recognition that the process is the same.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Can you see that that's all that's happened?
Well, I'm glad I called in. I couldn't see it before I talked to you.
Yeah. That's why we stick together. Yeah. because as you say, the reaction is really familiar. Right? Uh-huh. It has the ability, you know, the voice of me, and you're vulnerable, right? You didn't get the result at work that you wanted, and so and then this, the son has the diagnosis, and so there you are in kind of a weakened condition. It throws you into a pit, second pit of the evening, right? It throws you into a pit, because Pasha was in a pit earlier too, you know, and then then you're meant to just go down that same that same dark tunnel into depression. But really, it's true that you are very familiar with depression, and you're also very familiar with getting out of it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm seeing right now is this temptation to go into the story and the victim story.
And, you know, I don't know, somebody made this point. I think a lot of people could make this point who paid attention. If we could know all the stories that exist in the world right now, we would have no choice but to kill ourselves. Right? I mean, the world is full of stories.
Yeah.
Tragic stories. Awful things are happening all over the world. Every, you know, in any second of the day or night, right? So, yes, that's there. And certainly karmic conditioning wants us to go into one of those stories. You know, for a lot of people, if they don't have anything in their own lives that can qualify as a tragic story, there's always the news.
Oh, yeah. Well, I try to avoid that like the plague.
Yeah. But, yeah. Because, of course, that's meant to fill in the, you know, just in case you don't have anything wrong today, here, this is what's wrong in the world. And so which you do, you know, recognize that, whoa, this is a pull into a story. Because the thing about it is, it's not going to change anything, right? That hearing that story over and over and over is not going to change your son. It's not going to change the results at work. It's not going to change the political scene. It's not going to change your finances. It's not going to change your relationship. It's not going to change anything. It's just going to be one more dance around that, you know, that same dance floor of misery.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So it sounds like by believing it and being the victim, it's just being miserable, and it's not really like I'm taking any proactive...
Precisely. In fact, quite the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. What it does to us is make us so miserable that we're paralyzed. We can't even do the things that we could do.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said that word. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, and so all that you're able to do is kind of lie there with that IV of self-hate draining off your life force.
Yeah. And I think the overwhelm, the words you use, paralyzed, yeah, I mean, that's that's it, you know, just feeling like I can't do anything and kind of feeling like my mind goes blank and I don't really know what to do.
Yes, and yet we do know what to do, right? Because
you called the radio show. Yeah,
and,
I called the radio show.
And you can listen to the archives and you can get out that recorder and you can get some mentoring. You can listen to recordings of mentoring. You can turn your attention to life force building instead of life force draining. Because you need life force now. You don't need further draining of life force. That's already been in play. It doesn't feel good. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess I think one thing is just feeling kind of removed from practice because I'm not, you know, as close. I mean, I still participate, but I'm not as close to the Zen Center anymore.
Right. We can't come over to your house and harass you.
No.
So here's the thing. One last parting shot here, Mom. And that is what you have a chance to do is model the difference for your son. Now, I know he's little, but that doesn't mean he's not learning. And so he's got this diagnosis, which you can tell I have a fair degree of contempt for. And he has it. And he's got these issues that he's struggling with. And you have a chance to model the alternative. Okay? This is what you've got, little guy. And this is where you are now in life. It's going to be like this for the rest of what we hope is a really long life. So what we're developing now is the attitude of mind that's going to take you through whatever life brings you with compassion and kindness and unconditional love. Okay? That's what is an option for us. Having a life without problems, no, that is not an option for us. It's an idea put forth by an illusion of a self that is separate from life, but for a human being, that's just not going to happen. Okay? Life isn't easy, and it's not supposed to be easy. We have no evidence that it's supposed to be easy, right? So we are in a constant state of this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. We have no control over it. We have absolute control over how we approach it. And we can approach it from a place of this is awful and miserable and I can't handle it, or wow, this is exciting. Let's see how we get through this one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And, you know, even with this diagnosis, there are good things about it apparently as well. So,
yes, absolutely.
On the bright side.
There's good things about everything. If nothing else, it might do to him what, I mean, I would have had that diagnosis. I can promise you I would have had that diagnosis if they'd had it when I was a kid. But thank God they didn't have it. And so I was driven to Zen Buddhism. Lucky me. Maybe he'll be so driven. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. When this goes up, I don't know how quickly Michael gets these posted, but listen to it again, okay? Get it on your recording. And listen to it again and listen to it often. And you know, keep coming back to this, like everything else in life, is a spiritual opportunity. We can take advantage of it. We can be successful there.
Well, thank you, Sherry. I'm actually recording it right now. So maybe
Good. Better yet. Better yet. Good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, take good care of yourself and stay in touch, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Sherry.
Okay, you're very welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. What a blessed group we are, Sherry.
I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Yes.
It's amazing. I love it. I'm so glad we're together.
Me too. Thank you for re-inspiring us.
Yeah, well, and you and all of us, and we'll talk again next week.
Yes, let's do it again.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.